Don't Bogart that joint. Pass it over to Josh Gordon. Who? He's the newest New England Patriots wide receiver, and the Patriots are certainly taking a chance on an all-pro player who hopefully won't drop the ball and blow this opportunity. Anyway, in studio, a special edition of Behind the Media is next, and former Patriots GM, longtime Boston media personality Upton Bell joins us in studio next on Behind the Media.
You're tuned in to Behind the Media. Dan Lothian and Jimmy Young bring 70 years of award-winning broadcast experience to the table. From newsrooms across the country, behind anchor desks, and in the field, they've seen and covered it all. And now they are here to take you behind the media.
You're going to have to embrace technology. If you're an educator...
Oh, I'm embracing it.
I want you to use the phone to help teach these kids.
You don't need to do that. I was covering the president in China, and we did a behind-the-scenes video. This is a gong, or...
No, not a gong. A bong.
A bong.
With a beat.
That's right. Did I say
the
gong?
The gong is a gong
show. That's
right.
I said gong.
Gong
bong.
Makes noise.
Bong.
Okay.
Why is it, Jimmy? Why?
Because sex sells, Dan!
True. But it's only part of the answer.
It is... You have to be more creative now to be able to tell a story, and sometimes it's just a before and after picture and say, which one do you want to be?
Hi, everyone. Welcome to a special edition of Behind the Media. I'm Jimmy Young, filling in for Dan Lothian, who is on assignment at WGBH for the next few weeks. This podcast is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and the CLNSmedia.com network. Engage, like, subscribe, and love us on social media. Just go to CLNSmedia.com and search Behind the Media. It's sponsored by Mack Weldon, a premium line of essential, comfortable, casual wear from underwear to overwear. But go to MackWeldon.com and use the code CLNSmedia to get an extra 20% off your first order. We're also brought to you by Little Park Media, where ideas come to life, producing corporate videos and podcasts to tell your story. Go online to littleparkmedia.com or contact us at info@littleparkmedia.com. I do want to go back to football, because that's why you're here.
Yeah.
And you also had a great career in media, too, and we'll get to that in a minute. I do want to go back to the book and some of the things that are in the book that I found fascinating. Your relationship with Don Shula was completely new to me. I had no idea, because I'm a Boston fan. I could care less what happens outside of Boston. I only support my teams here. But the relationship that you developed with Don Shula when he was with the Colts was a fascinating thing. And I do want you to compare, because you did in the book, how Shula runs a team and an organization compared to Mr. Belichick down the road in Foxborough. You make some great analogies between the two. There were similarities. Can you expand a little bit on that and talk a little bit about Don Shula versus Bill Belichick? Because, you know, ultimately, one of them is going to be considered the greatest coach of all time, not Vince Lombardi, because Vince didn't win as many games as Don Shula and Bill Belichick.
Well, not only that, to some of the points that I've made in the book. First and foremost, I look at four or five as right there. Greatest coach, innovator. Bill Belichick paid tribute to him when he went to Cleveland. Paul Brown, when I first went to, and I'll get to Belichick because I need to set this up.
Yep.
1950, they finally, my father had affected as commissioner, a merger between the old All-America Conference and the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went with him to the first training camp in Cleveland, Hiram in Ohio. Now, you got to remember what the game was like before that. Brown instituted the 40-yard dash, the IQ test, the film study, the playbook, coming to a hotel the night before the game. The one thing I don't like that I see today, but it was successful with Otto Graham, was calling every play. The sideline, the messenger guard. And guess who was one of the top messenger guards? Chuck Knoll.
Chuck Knoll. Remember, he did pretty well, too, huh?
Yeah. Well, he was that at Baltimore, and I would say Paul Brown, Don Shula, Bill Belichick, Chuck Knoll, Walsh. I mean, there are other ones there that are really good. But here's the thing that people will not buy here. First and foremost, when you're only 24 years old and the person you're working for drops dead and you come back and you try to persuade Shula and the owner, Carol Rosenblum, put it in the hands of a 25-year-old kid.
And we're talking about your dad who passed away during a football game in Philadelphia. You were there, and you are that 24-year-old kid. Keep going.
Well, no, but then later on,
I
was the assistant personnel director. The personnel director was about 40 years older than me. I was in Dallas scouting a player for spring practice, and I get a call, your boss has dropped dead. Get in a car and get the hell back here or a plane. I went back, and I walked into Shula. And people think Lombardi was tough or that Bill Belichick is tough. Shula was really tough.
Oh, yeah.
He was the most direct guy that I ever worked with. Never lied to you. You get in a fight with him, and it was forgotten the next day. And I said, listen, the only way to deal with you is to tell you, I want that job. I know you're going to hire or look at hiring a lot of other people. Give me a year. And if you don't like it, bring somebody else in. He made a decision that I wouldn't have made if I was a coach. I would have never given a 25-year-old kid the job. But he did. And that told me something about him. That basically he was willing to take a chance. You know, he was going to protect himself.
Right.
And if he didn't, I'd be in here and I'd be your assistant.
Assistant. Helper. You'd be a production assistant. I get you.
Whatever it was.
Yeah.
But the thing about him is he had one of the great minds I've ever been around. He also was something else that not every coach is. Belichick to a degree. But Shula understood players and he really respected the draft. And so, therefore, if I would go to him about a player, he would listen, and then he would study it. He wasn't somebody who said, just get me the players, and if you screw up, that's it, you're out the door. And so he had the ability to judge players. His offensive mind, he was a defensive genius at that time with the Detroit Lions.
And that was the reputation, as you know, of Belichick, too. Yeah. But they were both teachers. Were they not teachers of technique? Isn't that a similarity between the two?
It is, but here's the thing people forget. The exceptional ones, the exceptional defensive minds, usually know the offense better because what the hell have they been studying but offense all along? And I'll never forget the day that Norm Van Brocklin, who was the head coach of the Minnesota Vikings, one of the great minds as a quarterback, led the Eagles that were not a very good team to the 60 championship against the Packers before their reign started. He came to Baltimore. And they get up on the blackboard, and for 2 days, match wits. It was like Bobby Fischer versus
Spassky, Boris Spassky.
Boris Spassky.
We are dating ourselves again.
Why not? You know what?
That's right.
People don't read or write enough today.
No, they don't.
So we're giving them a lesson.
Yes.
So Shula and Van Brocklin, it was like watching a great tennis match. Going back and forth and back and forth. And afterwards I said, you know, Van Brocklin really was the definitive offensive mind. But after that was over, I said, you know what? Shula knows more than him. So there was that degree. And remember this about Shula. People talk about the great Packer teams of the 60s. We would have won the five that they won, except for a missed kick in Green Bay, and two other ones, when then you didn't have the luck of Patriots, great as they are, in a lousy division, win a couple of games, and you're in the Super Bowl. Then, if you didn't qualify and win your division, there was no playoff.
You are listening to Behind the Media with Jimmy Young, and I am joined by the great Upton Bell, former general manager of the New England Patriots, as well as a player personnel guy. But more, I'll tell you what, Upton, let's cut to the chase. You're also a media personality. You've been on radio in Boston for about 30 years, and you are always a go-to guy to bring in studio for insight that, let's just say, some of the talent you worked with didn't get. You've broken down film. You understand what it's like to be in the trenches and what it's like to be in the locker room and work with some of the greatest minds in the NFL history. If Don Shula was coaching in the Super Bowl last year, would he have played Malcolm Butler?
Yes.
No doubt about it.
Yes, and that's a mystery that will never be explained. But I also understand the philosophy of coaches,
yep,
like a Belichick. And this is not a knock at him, by the way.
I can knock him, though, because I do blame him for not winning the Super Bowl last year. It's the first time I can point the finger and said, you went against everything that you stood for. It isn't all about the team. You are so arrogant that you can't get out of your own way. And that's his weakness. Go ahead. I had to do it.
Well, but let me explain something else.
Go ahead.
If you're not arrogant, you're not going to be a great actor, a great broadcaster, or a great coach.
I like that.
If somebody isn't arrogant enough, I would hire them.
There's confidence and there's arrogance, though. You can be confident, Upton, but the arrogance takes you over the line, that you make yourself bigger than the decision, which is really the first time I saw Mr. Belichick do that.
Well, that's right. But let me give you another thing. And I by the way, I'm one of the people that agree with you on this, is we don't know and we will never know what went on really behind that week. And I'm convinced there are more things that we will never find out about that went on that week. And I will tell you this, because I've sat in on a lot of meetings with coaches, and including meetings in our business, where I'm saying to somebody, hey, that guy is really great. He belongs on the air. And the general manager, program director say, yeah, but he's a pain in the ass. And I say, so what?
You talking about me? Because definitely know I've been part of those meetings and people have described me that way.
But you're still working.
Yes, sort of, kind of. Right? Yeah, right. Okay, fine.
And most of them are fired.
Yeah, well, that's not true. Go ahead, keep going.
So what I'm saying is that there had to be a reason. But here's where it got me. When you saw that your cornerback was getting picked on early, and then you saw your safeties were, and you saw essentially a second-string quarterback cutting you apart, although I never believed in that defense.
Yep. And the communication breakdown in the defensive secondary all game long. Go ahead.
If he had at least put him in the last quarter.
Correct.
Then I think you could have accepted all the other things. But again, here's the great thing and here's the bad thing about Belichick. You'll never know, not only about that, but even in this new book that has been written, that is an expose of the NFL.
A kid from Newton.
Yeah.
A nice Jewish boy from Newton, I think, wrote that. But Mark Leibovitz?
Mark Leibovitz. Yeah. Leibovitz.
Leibovitz.
Is that basically he talked to Brady. Brady was willing to talk. Kraft talked too much.
He always does. It's nothing wrong with that. He owns the team. He can get away with it.
And a lot of other owners, including Jerry Jones, have said he'd much rather get in the Hall of Fame than win a championship. I said, that tells me enough about him.
Right.
But the only guy that wouldn't tell him anything was Belichick. Like him or not, he is always true to himself. A lot of other people are pretty damn phony about talking to people and doing things. So, but bottom line is, that was a mistake. People do make mistakes. But in looking at it, and here's one thing I do want to bring up with your audience that bothers me, because there are too many people out there that are now just getting into this business on the sports side. And here it goes. Boy, the GOAT did it again.
Oh, I hate
greatest
that.
Player of all time. And that includes the media, the Chad Finns in the world and stuff like that. And they'll say,
Chad Finn.
Yeah, I do too.
Okay.
But that doesn't make him right. Because here's the thing.
Okay.
I look at it and I go all the way back, as I do in the book.
Yes, you do.
All the way back.
At the creation. You were present at the creation.
Right there. Right in the stable with the rest of the wise men. I go back and I look all the way, and the two people that I do pick in the book as the two greatest are Brady and Unitas.
Yep.
But what I say is, and this includes Marino, Elway, and a lot of people.
Even Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers is fabulous. Yep. If they had the rules that you had today, Unitas was still the greatest quarterback I've ever seen. He played in a time where there were better teams each week. He took a beating on every play. He ended up totally crippled.
Yeah.
But as far as he had the same thing that Brady has, they understand defenses. They know how to make the move. But here's the big difference. Unitas called every one of his plays.
I know.
Brady calls none of them. Now, the thing is,
Brady can change the play at the line of scrimmage, however.
That's correct. But still,
okay.
Remember the key play in the Atlanta game near the end when they're making the comeback and Josh McDaniels is in his ear and telling him the cornerback is going to be playing you to the inside. Make the throw to the outside. You know what? When you're on your own,
you still throw the ball. You're the quarterback.
Yeah.
You still make that decision.
Yeah, you may. But that's my point. The player is bigger, quicker, stronger, faster. But I will argue the fact that if you have not seen it going all the way back, just like I can't tell you whether Babe Ruth or Jim Thorpe were the greatest of all time because I didn't see them. But going back to one I did see, I would say that I can say unequivocally, John Unitas
was the best.
Was the best.
Do you think that football should? They'll never change this. I know, but wouldn't it be great to see for the last quarter of each game that you turn off the quarterbacks have to make their own calls. I just think that would be amazing, and I think that would be fun to watch, and it would also give the Patriots even more of an advantage.
Well, that's what I'm saying, because I don't need Josh McDaniels making $5 million a year to tell Brady what to do, because Brady would be perfect in the Unitas era, because Brady doesn't need somebody calling plays for him. He really knows what he's doing. But look what it's bastardized itself into now. Now you got the defense, the linebacker. He's got a thing in his helmet
right. And
calling the plays.
They're robots. They're becoming robots.
You're taking the game away from the players. And you're not – part of football is quick reaction. It's like the hitter and the batter.
But they're planning what 11 guys do on the field or 22 guys on every play. Everybody has a job and a responsibility on every play.
But, Jimmy, they always did. They always did. But they were thinkers.
Right.
They prepared them. They prepare them even more now.
Right.
Why not? That's what's made the game to me. Now, I'm talking about me.
I know. You've seen it for 80 years. I've seen it for 60 years.
It looks, if you turn on the red zone and you look at, I've got two sets and you look at all these games and I say, they all look the same.
Interesting.
They all look the same. And if there's a greater danger than the concussion situation and the drug situation and the police blotter situation in the offseason,
mm-hmm.
and the parents not wanting their kids to play, the greatest danger has always been, I remember what a TV executive told me back in the 60s. He said, when we get tired of you, we'll go to bullfighting. And what you
it's
have to
just
be careful
content, on, and it's just eyeballs.
That's it. They don't get enough eyeballs.
That's right.
They
That's
don't
media.
Care about the concussion.
That's Media 101. I actually said that to my class yesterday at Dean College. I do teach down there, and I talk about media, and it's just a conduit for content. And the whole key to it is the content better be interesting enough for people to watch it and be entertained, or it doesn't work, and you get something else. Bullfighting or whatever you want to throw out there. I like the bulls. Let's not go there.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to talk to you about your media career and working with Bob Lobel. Bob Lobel and I go back to the exact day that he started at WBZ. I held the door for Bob on his first day because I was producing sports with Jimmy Myers, for Jimmy Myers at Channel 4 at the time in 76, 77. And I've always loved Bob. When I became a professional sportscaster in Portland, Maine in the early 80s, I was Bob Lobel on TV because you always imitate and emulate the people that you respect, whether that's a play-by-play announcer, whether that's a salesperson, whatever it is. So I was Bob Lobel for a handful of years until I got to the point where I was comfortable being myself, two divorces later, and became who I am, what I ever was. And I got my own show in New England Cable News and all that neat stuff. And that was my career. My goal was to come back. First of all, how is Bob doing? And second of all, working with him, do you remember one or two special moments with him that really stand out?
Well, first and foremost, I haven't seen him in a while. I know he's had his
problems.
Struggling.
He's struggling.
He's really struggling, and it's a shame he had those back operations.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to tell him, forget it, anytime anybody touches your back. I mean, I had a terrible accident, and fractured 49 parts of my spine and broke my neck in two places.
Whoa.
And
when was this? When was that?
This is ironic because it's your ex-station.
Three
years ago now, just before the Super Bowl and the Brady Deflategate routine.
Yeah.
Your friend of mine, Jim Browdy, said, would you please come up, bring your Super Bowl ring with you. It's a week before the Super Bowl against Seattle.
Yeah.
He said, and I want to try and straighten out this whole thing. Did he deflate the balls or not? So I went and did the interview, and by the way, I said he did.
Yep.
Absolutely. No question in my mind. I said, it's only a $25,000 fine. What the hell are we worried about? Except Brady's all about image.
Right.
On my way home, 6:30 at night, going down Route 2, my car either hit a patch of ice or something happened, went up an embankment, flew up in the air, turned over twice. Channel 5 has the tape of it. Came down on the front of another car, and that when they pulled me out, they thought I was dead.
Mm.
I broke my neck in two places, just hanging off, and fractured my spine, severe concussion. Every part of my body from the waist up, they thought I was going to be paralyzed. And the thing is, and I told Lobel, I said, they had two choices when they rushed me to the MGH. They said, we can operate. We can't guarantee you'll live through it. We can try this of putting you in this big
collar.
Contraption.
In the collar.
Well, no, it's a collar, but it was a full body thing.
Right.
Because
yep.
of all the fractures.
Yep, yep.
And I said, I forget the operation. I said, I don't want anybody touching my spine. So 6 months later, I've spent 6 months in a hospital.
Wow.
And was able to recover because I was in good shape. I just said to Lobel, don't let anybody touch your back, your spine. And of course, he did. So he's having a hard time, but he's doing the cannabis.
He's doing a podcast on CLNS Media, which happens to be the same media
thing.
Outlet that we work with and we adore.
Good for him.
And I give him a lot of credit for making it happen. In fact, I met Jim McMahon, the former Bears quarterback, this past weekend at the Freedom Rally.
Is he all there? I mean, I know
no,
he's had terrific time.
No, he is absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's apparent and it's sad, but I still, said to him, I just want you to know that I was one of those 1,000 media guys to stick a microphone in front of you during your career, and you were always great copy, and I appreciated it. You know what I mean? And even though he beat and broke my heart when the Bears crushed the Patriots, it's still, I have learned in later in life to respect championships, no matter who gets them.
Well, that might have been one of the greatest teams of all time.
And you have been listening to Behind the Media with Jimmy Young. I've been filling in for Dan Lothian, who is on assignment at WGBH for the past week. This podcast is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and the CLNSmedia.com network. Engage, like, subscribe, and please love us on social media. You can also remember that this program is helped by a sponsorship courtesy of Mack Weldon. It's a premium line of essential, comfortable, casual wear, from underwear to overwear. But go to MackWeldon.com and use the code CLNSmedia to get an extra 20% off your order. For Upton Bell, my director, Steve Helmuth, our new executive producer, Joyce Gerber, I'm Jimmy Young. We'll see you next time on Behind the Media. And now you know what goes on behind the media.
I love it.
Woof.
I love it.
How long, Steve?